Well, then we will start right now. This is the Bay Area Air Quality Management District Board of Directors special meeting. And this the topic of this meeting is a budget hearing. So we will call the meeting to order and take the roll.
On the roll for the Board of Directors budget hearing of May 6th, 2020, Director Abe-Koga.
Here.
Director Barrett.
Here.
Director Bowders.
Here.
Director Canepa.
Here.
Director Cutter.
Here.
Director Joya.
Here.
Director Groom.
Yes, I'm here.
Director Haggerty.
Here.
Director Hudson.
Here.
Director Hurt.
Present.
Director Ju.
Here.
Director Nis.
Here.
Director Miley.
Here.
Director Rice.
Here.
Director Ross.
Here.
Director Sparing. Director Wagon Connect.
Here.
Director Walton.
Here.
Director Wilson.
Here.
Director Zane.
Here.
Secretary Mitchoff. Secretary Mitchoff.
Here.
Vice Chair Chavez.
Here.
Here Stinks.
Here.
We have almost everybody. We have a quorum.
Yay.
Thank you much. All right. Let's move to item two. This is the first public hearing on the proposed Air District budget for fiscal year ending 2021. Take it away, staff.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. McKay is going to provide you with this presentation, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Sinks and members of the board. This is the first of two public hearings for the proposed budget for fiscal year ending 2021. Prior to this, we had two presentations of this budget to the Budget and Finance Committee. That was in March and in April. And now the two public hearings for the full board occur today, and then with a request for action the second time on June 3rd. Next slide, please. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about the status of the current fiscal year, which is fine, and I won't dwell on that. And then I'll talk about financial history, which in our current times is perhaps even more relevant than it has been in recent years. I'll then describe the proposed budget for fiscal year ending 2021 and go to next steps. Next slide, please. So in the current fiscal year, we've got a $105 million budget. We did use reserves, $4 million to build out Richmond. We have a little over two of that for the build out that is complete out there. And so we got another couple million left over that we could use for seismic retrofit. I'll just remind the board that when we purchased the Richmond office, there was a lease back from the owners. The lease back allowed us to build out a small portion of that space, about 5,000 square feet, which we did. And then at the end of last calendar year, the lease back ended. And so now we are able to use the rest of the building. So for the current fiscal year, revenues and expenditures are more or less on target. And at this time, in spite of the current situation, I'm not prepared to suggest we should consider that those might be substantially on target. Next slide, please. So something that's unfortunately very relevant now. So we have experienced downturns in the past, and it's quite relevant to discuss what actions we took during that time. We took a variety of actions, and some of those were already beginning with this proposed budget. First of all, we did draw down our reserves during the last financial downturn, and this budget does in fact include a drawdown of reserves to meet our operating expenses of $5 million, which I'll go into in more detail. We did stop hiring and allow staff reduction through attrition, not something we're yet proposing here. We postponed expenditures, which we certainly are doing here. I'll talk about how our service supply has been pared back. We deferred capital investment, which we're doing here because we're going to suggest we not yet proceed with most of the rest of the Richmond build-out, headquarters east. We initiated a cost recovery policy, which was very helpful. And I will touch briefly on the history of cost recovery and how we're doing. However, in this proposed budget, we are not bringing forward cost recovery increase to fees. And finally, even through the downturn, we did continue funding retirement liabilities. The board's quite familiar with the slides that illustrate the result of that, had the beneficial result that we were investing at the bottom of the market and has served us well for unfunded liabilities. Next slide, please. So this is now the historical, continuing the historical portion of this presentation. During the downturn, we drew down reserves to the board minimum, which was 15% of the budget at the time. That was about $9 million. And then our reserves recovered. The current minimum is about $20 million. And as of 2019, the audited reserves are 45, but I will discuss the manner in which some of those have been used. Again, this is historical. I will talk about the current status as well in a future slide here. Next slide, please. We also, as I mentioned, did allow attrition to reduce our headcount, and our headcount has since trended back upwards. You can see that for 2019, we were at 353 billed seats. The budget that we're bringing forward today contemplates 405 filled seats. So that's 10 vacancies on the 415 that are authorized by the board. Next slide, please. Again, an historical look at OPEB. OPEB funding, surprisingly, is not required, but obviously that doesn't make the obligation go away. So the Air District chose to embark some years ago on a slow and steady process of funding our OPEB obligation and has made very good progress. This slide illustrates that progress over a period of years to the last analysis of the fund, which was in 2019. And at that time, as you can see, we were at about an obligation of about $74 million, and we were funded at about just over $50 million. Next slide, please. the slide speaks for itself. We do have an unfortunate history, as does everyone, with CalPERS perspective on their funding ratio and their rate of return. So I'll leave that as a resource and go to the next slide, please. so the districts, I'm not going to belabor cost recovery because it does get addressed in the fee presentations. But we're authorized to collect 100% of our costs for core programs, and we've made progress. So the average of the last 3 years has been about 84%. That's very good progress. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, I won't belabor this. We started from a difficult position in 2009 and have been increasing about 6% annually every year since that time. Next slide, please. So this shows our historical revenue trends. You can see a jump in 2019. That's just because we pulled forward some permitting revenues into that fiscal year when we were collecting. So a steady increase over time. You'll note that for the approved budget for the year that we're in, 2020, the service and supply number, I'm sorry, the permit fee revenue number there is $48.5 million. Now, we're bringing forward no change to our fees, to our existing fees, and $1 million with the new AB 617 fee. But even though we are not reducing the fee structure, we are anticipating a reduction in our receipts because of the reduced economic activity. And I will revisit this topic, but our current estimate is that for most of our permit fees, we overall, a blended rate, we're going to anticipate 85% of what we anticipate for this fiscal year. So that's why even though the fees aren't being reduced, you see that the permit fee number goes from 48.5 in 2020 to 41.6 in 2021. Next slide, please. Expenditures. So we were rather steady from 2009 through 2015, and taking on new obligations have seen our expenditures increase with time. I'll contrast the 2020 budget and the 2021 proposed budget. Although we had originally expected to bring forward a substantial increase in service supply budget, and I'll talk about that in detail, we are instead bringing forward no change to our service and supply budget. We had anticipated, and I'll talk about this in a little bit of detail, we had anticipated some use of reserves to build out Richmond. We're no longer asking for that use of reserves for capital. So it's also relevant to point out that later in this presentation, I will talk about various scenarios that are more optimistic or less optimistic. When discussing those less optimistic scenarios, a primary concern, of course, would be that the state would no longer be providing $9 million for AB 617 that is part of this budget. In addition, as I mentioned, we are, even with the $9 million coming in, we're still using $5 million out of reserves. So, in a future slide, I'll be showing some charts that are a bit perhaps concerning in the less optimistic scenarios. And in the situation, we might, for instance, be seeing that we have a gap of, say, $14 million in any given year. So it's relevant then to consider what our various options would be. And one can see here that we were at a steady state 2009 through 2015. That's, in fact, about $14 million. Less than what we're bringing forward here. So we have a variety of options. I'm not suggesting that would be the appropriate option at all. I'm just talking about what wiggle room we have. Let's go to the next slide, please. So for the proposed budget, we are bringing forward $106 million. That's a decrease of $16 million from what we were going to propose. As I mentioned, we're using $5 million from reserves to meet our operating expenses. We are not bringing forward amendment to existing fee schedules. We are bringing forward a new AB 617 fee of $1 million. This assumes a personnel budget of 405 filled seats. The board's authorized 415. There is no increase in service supply from the current fiscal year. We are continuing to address the retirement liabilities. In other words, as we have done for many, many years now, $4 million discretionary into OPEB. And as we've done now for a few years, $1 million into CalPERS. And this budget does include currently the 3.1% COLA for salaries. And next slide, please. So this is a slide that focuses on differences between what we were going to bring forward and what we are now bringing forward. And I'll then in some future slides, I'll discuss these same numbers from a slightly different perspective, where I talk about looking forward and potential effects on reserves. So our original revenue projection for the coming fiscal year was $116 million. And in addition, we had anticipated using $6 million of reserves to build out Headquarters East, Richmond. As I mentioned, we're no longer bringing forward the use of any of those reserves to build out Richmond, although in the prior year, we allocated $4 million, some of which is still available. Again, we are still using reserves in this budget, but it's not for capital expense. It's just to cover our operating expenses. So let me talk. I'm going to go down through these lines one at a time, just to talk about the difference between what our original expectation was versus what we've got here. So first of all, there's a negative 12.4. That's the reduction in the, I'm sorry, I'm still on the prior slide. Thank you. 12.4 is the reduction in expected revenue. Again, please note that we've not changed our underlying fee structure. The existing fees, we simply expect to collect less because of reduction in economic activity. The original budget also brought forward $3.7 million in new fees. That's been reduced to only $1 million. And so that's a reduction of 2.7 from the originally contemplated budget. We were going to use $6 million in reserves to build out Richmond. Now we're going to use $5 million to meet our operating expenses. So the use of reserves
in your career where I really...
So the use of reserves has changed from being used for capital expenditure to being used to meet our operating budget. Some other revenue has been reduced. For instance, our expectations for legal settlements. Now we've increased our use of grant resource grant sources by allocating some folks from, for instance, our enforcement division over to do work that supports the grants work. That's the revenue side. Let's continue on down. So our revised revenue is 106.5, and if we continue on down, our original expenditures. Our personnel costs are essentially equivalent to our original budget. We have reduced the service supplies by almost $10 million to be the same as the year that we're currently in. And we reduced, as I mentioned, capital costs by $6 million because we're no longer contemplating the build out, at least for now, of Headquarters East in Richmond. And I'll revisit these numbers again from a different perspective when I talk about reserves. So next slide, please. The pie charts we always show. The thing that sticks out here is the permit fees usually are about 50%, and they're now closer to 40% of our total revenues. And next slide, please. And as always, our personnel costs are about 70% of our budget. Next slide, please. I'm not going to do line items here. This is the breakdown of the capital expenditures in the current budget. The last line, not the sum, but the last line is our permitting systems, which is about two-thirds of this, and the rest is lab and monitoring equipment. Next slide. So let's talk about what might happen with our reserves here. First of all, we'll just focus on where we're at right now with this budget, and then I'll move forward to the next item, where we'll do some projections into the future. As of June 30, 2019, we had reserves of $45 million. Now, some of those have been designated. $2 million of those, the board has set aside to pre-fund CalPERS, $1 million for Woodsmoke grants, and $3 million for the TIO's revolving loan program. In addition, the economic contingency guidance policy from the board is 20% of the budget, so that's $21 million. So in round numbers, of that $45 million, our total designations are $27 million. Now, in addition, we have some use of reserves. And so, for instance, $3 million for legal settlement, $4 million for build-out in Richmond. As I mentioned, we've used a bit over two of that for the build-out that's complete, and we'll be coming back to the board to see if the board supports spending another one and a half or so for seismic so that we can use the rest of the building. And then finally, in the proposed budget, we use $5 million in reserves to balance the budget. So that means that nominally we have $6 million available for use without going below the economic contingency guidance. Next slide, please. So this is the point where we try to predict the future, or more accurately, perhaps, what we do is talk about a set of assumptions and what our reserves would look like given that set of assumptions. So I'm going to show a chart that shows some lines of how reserves trend over the years. And this references the assumptions that are in place for those slides. So first of all, please recall, as I just indicated in the last slide, that our reserves actually include some funds that are already allocated, though the board has the authority to reallocate those. That includes pension and TIO loans. We are assuming 405 filled seats. We're currently assuming that property tax is unaffected, and we have had extensive conversations on that assumption internally and feel that that is the correct assumption at this time. The service and supply budget for the proposed budget is exactly equal to that in the current fiscal year, unchanged. Again, that's a $10 million reduction from what we were originally going to propose. Even though the fee structure for existing fees hasn't changed, we're going to expect only 85% revenue as compared to the current fiscal year for most of our fees, except for our asbestos fee, which is very much tied to economic activity. And we're expecting asbestos only to be 50%. And so that's a hit of about $1.5 million, the asbestos. We are bringing forward the new AB 617 fee, $1 million, and we're assuming that persists. We're assuming the $1.5 million transfer from grants persists, and that is use of folks such as enforcement folks to support some grants work. When we use the phrase full new fees in our assumptions, that means going back not to only $1 million in new fees, but the full originally proposed new fees, which was $3.7 million every year. We are assuming no Richmond work except for what's already allocated out of the current fiscal year for seismic, and which, by the way, is not yet approved by the board, so that doesn't have to be done. We are assuming COLA for personnel costs in the coming fiscal year, and as I'm about to show a series of years, one after another, recurring COLA, both for revenue and for expenditures. So revenue means including permits, revenue and expenditures into the future. So next slide, please. So this slide, rather than attempt many different scenarios on one slide, which I think doesn't lend itself to clarity, I've just got a few different scenarios here, and those are the same assumptions there in the bottom right-hand corner that I just showed. The dashed line is the reserves minimum target. That's 20% of budget. And we're showing fiscal years 2020 to 2025 here. The blue line with the triangles at the top assumes that the state is going to continue giving us $9 million in AB 617 funds every year. And it also assumes that what we've called full new fees, that's going to 3.7 in new fees, not just one, is instated in the next fiscal year budget, fiscal year ending 2022. Now, unfortunately, it is not clear that Sacramento will provide that $9 million every year going forward. And it is probable that we will get it for the proposed budget year. However, it's quite simple to illustrate any given year here. So the red and the green lines, the red with the square and the green with the diamonds trending down, contemplate that we no longer get that $9 million. The red contemplates that the full new fees, 3.7, are instated in 2022, and the green contemplates that they are not. So and those lines assume we do not get this proposed fiscal year $9 million. But if you simply wish to suggest that we will get it this year, but not next year, all one has to do is detach those two trending down lines from 2020 and attach them to the blue line in 2021, and that's your projection. So I think I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation that in a pessimistic scenario, we might be looking at a need of about $14 million per year, and that's roughly what this would show. Next slide, please. I'm going to quickly run through our retirement liabilities. This is something the Budget and Finance Committee and the Board see regularly, so I will move rather quickly on these as opposed to some of the more detailed slides I've been spending some time on. OPEB, I showed the historical chart. It's a pretty good, our retirement liabilities are OPEB and pension, and we have historically sometimes tried to use our 105 trusts to shelter our reserves. For instance, we tend to put that $4 million into OPEB the day before the fiscal year to help shelter our reserves. That was something that was suggested back in the downturn in 2008. Next slide, please. OPEB currently funded about 75%, as I showed in the chart. Good story, we made a lot of progress, and that's the 2019 number. Funding policy is 90%. And if we continue as we're doing, we'll be there very soon. Next slide, please. CalPERS. Using CalPERS numbers, we're at 75% funded, 26% unfunded. Again, we have a funding policy from the board of 90%. And a target date of nominally 20 years from when that policy was put in place. And so we've been putting aside $1 million a year. Currently, it's with the county, but we've been bringing forward to the Budget Finance Committee considerations for 115 trusts to move that to. Next slide, please. So to summarize, the proposed budget uses $5 million from reserves to meet our operating expenses. It contemplates 405 filled seats. There is no amendment to existing fee schedules, and our expected revenues are less than the current year because of the economic slowdown, even though there's no change. There's a $1 million new fee for AB 617, and this budget continues to set aside $1 million for pension, $4 million for OPEB. On that note, I should point out that CalPERS projected obligations, which are perhaps a bit optimistic, show that our required CalPERS contribution, not our discretionary, will increase by about $3.5 million over the next 3 years. So the Budget Finance Committee has talked about how rolling off the 4 million from OPEB is then gives us that 3.5 for the required pension contribution. Next slide, please. So we're currently, we brought this to the Budget and Finance Committee twice, along with fees. And this is the first full board public hearing. Next slide, please. And the second public hearing where we would have an action item would be June 3rd. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Let's see if I have any hands raised. Director Bowders, followed by Director Hurt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation, Jeff. I have a series of five questions that expand upon statements you made. I had down already, but hopefully you can illuminate further. First, on slide 12, the personnel costs. We have $67.9 million for fiscal year that's ending this year, and then it's forecasted to be $75 million next year. And I'm wondering, what contributes? Is that simply COLA contributing to that, or are there other changes that are leading to a $7 million increase in personnel costs? Freeze.
That's filling seats plus 3% COLA.
Okay. Thank you. The next question is on the permit fees on slide 11. Again, you touched on it briefly that you noted an item I had seen, which was the orange bars between fiscal year ending 2020 and ending in 2021. And I'm just wondering what metric was used to calculate and estimate that $7 million reduction?
Yes, we have a variety of methods. We have been working with our economist, Leonid Bach, to project the financial impact on the Bay Area. And in, of course, specifically the impact on our revenue sources. In addition, we do have conversations both on the record and frankly sometimes off the record with some of our regulated facilities about their projected revenues. And this is our best estimate based on those inputs.
Okay, so it's a combination of revenues plus businesses being opened or closed to conduct business and request permits.
That's correct.
Okay. The next one is slide 8, and you touched on this, but I just wanted to get clarification. On the CalPERS rate of return, we have at the bottom an estimated rate of return in 2019 of 6.7. What was the date of that estimation, and have they provided any guidance, or do you have any thoughts on what it might be for the following year?
That's relatively recent. I believe we obtained that in March. And we don't have any guidance about it. I wouldn't attempt to predict what it will be for the next year.
Okay, so but for going forward in your calculations on our expenditure side of the ledger with respect to ongoing CalPERS, you mentioned 3.5 million over the next 3 years. So I'm just wondering, does that calculate or anticipate a change in the discount rate, or are you assuming that the discount rate will remain in place as it currently is?
That contemplates the discount rate changes that CalPERS has told us it will be putting in place. CalPERS has always done multi-year smoothing over many years. So they are very slow to change their discount rates. It's possible that they would change what they're projecting for discount rate over the next couple of years even, but they tend to change things out at a later time than just a year or two.
Okay. On slide 20, you answered most of my questions about AB 617 funding and the assumptions related to changes from the state. I appreciated the graph. I thought that was very helpful. I just am curious, the current budget proposal you have recommends continuing to spend the additional $1 million in discretionary PERS contributions and the additional $4 million for OPEB. In a hypothetical situation where AB 617 funding was to be eliminated, would you be recommending that we stop making those payments, or would you be approaching it from a different angle first?
We in the last downturn, tried to avoid making, so to speak, wrenching changes in any one place. And that has served us well in the sense that because we have kept those elements as a sort of structural element of the budget, it allows us to think about using those now to fund required contributions. So the $1 million for CalPERS is a relatively nominal amount. The $4 million for OPEB, as I've indicated, essentially that's discretionary for OPEB, but essentially rolls over into a non-discretionary for CalPERS over a period of 3 years with their discount rate projection.
Thank you. My last two questions. On slide 14, there is a proposal here to essentially freeze $9.5 million of services and supplies that are supposed to be expended over what was previously in the budget and not have that additional expense. That's a significant amount of money, and I'm just wondering what is encapsulated. I know there's no discussion of what those services and supplies are, and so I'm just curious how that's going to materially change the work that's done at the district and what we're cutting when we do that.
So in changing the service supply budget, what the district has done is rather than attempt to, so to speak, anticipate either the board's direction or the executive officer's decisions about what to prioritize, we froze the service supply budget as being exactly equal to the current fiscal year that we're in. With the expectation that decisions about reallocation would be informed by developments as we go forward.
Thank you. So can you just tell me what the services are, like at a high level? I mean, that's the thing I'm trying to figure out is like, what is it that's being cut?
Well,
it's not being cut. There was a proposed addition of something. I'm just wondering what we're not adding now.
So, what we're not, well, it's largely AB 617 related work. Right. So I think that's a fair statement. But again, that's at the board and the executive officer's discretion. So
did you want me to try to answer this question?
Please. Thank you, Jack.
Well, I mean, Director Batters, there's a series of assessments and things like that that are part of the proposals that were coming up from the 617 staff relative to Richmond, as well as West Oakland and other work as well. And so there was that and also capital equipment relative to monitoring, all of which were kind of on a list of, you know, if we could, this is what we would propose, but that's not what necessarily made sense. So we brought it back down to what a current service and supplies budget for this fiscal year we're in.
So just to clarify that, Jack, we're anticipated ramp up that we were going to do for the Richmond 617 program and mm-hmm. the implementation of parts of the West Oakland plan are going to basically be delayed or deferred.
No, not necessarily. We're instead, I think, going to just work kind of basically on the same trajectory we were for this year. Greg is also, I think, on the line. He can probably provide a little bit more information, but this is kind of typical of what we do every year. We actually ask ourselves, you know, this is again pre-COVID. If we go back to February, early March, we asked ourselves, okay, how can we continue to ramp up kind of on a trajectory as we were working on this? But then when COVID came in, we started to say, okay, what can we really realistically get done in a somewhat given the current situation we find ourselves in. So that went into a little bit more.
Oh, I think Jack froze.
It's Jack Frost.
While he's frozen, can I ask you my last question, Jeff?
Sure.
Thanks. So staff at the Budget Advisory Committee, there was significant discussion about your recommendation that we have no new fees on existing schedules this year. And I'm just wondering what factors are you going to be looking for or do you think need to change before you can recommend an increase?
So my understanding is that what the Budget and Finance Committee contemplated was revisiting that, possibly in October.
I understand, but the staff actually recommended against the fees, and so I'm asking about the staff recommendation and the factors you used to make that decision. So I'm curious what the staff will need to see change before you change your recommendation and advise the recommendation of new fees.
I think it would be the ability of our revenue sources to support those sorts of increases.
And is that all revenue sources, or is that several revenue sources? Can you be more specific? Because I'm just curious, with restaurants forecasted to not operate for, you know, at capacity for as much as 18 to 24 months, I mean, are we going to be litmus testing this in one way or another? Because I'm just curious with the recommendation for no new fees, when, how and when we will calculate how that changes.
Yeah, as you know, Director Bowders, our fee schedules are extensive and a bit complex. So we certainly have the ability to pick and choose which schedules we would suggest be changed. So I would expect that anything that was brought forward, to your point exactly, would take into account differences between different segments of the economy.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no more questions.
Thank you. Appreciate all that discussion. And I will add that there was we had two budget and finance hearings, and there was a robust debate and some, differing of minds about whether or not to impose fees and certain fee increases on certain of the schedules. Director Hurt.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Director Bowders actually asked two of my questions, so I'll just expand on one of the questions he asked just for better understanding. On the entities who will be subjected to a possible increase in the fee schedule, what details have they provided on their inability to pay those fees? And I asked that question because I was looking at different earnings forecasts, and first quarter revenues are in the billions for some of our refineries. And so I'm just curious what kind of fact checking, what kind of details we've received on how the fee schedule increase would affect them.
I don't think I have specific information from the refineries, for instance, that it is not a public information or was specific to that decision, Director Hurt.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice.
Thank you. Thanks, Jeff, for the presentation, and I always appreciate your slides. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Thank you.
There's two sort of areas for me that cause a little concern, I want to fully understand. So when we do look at our revenue stream and the different areas, what it's so different than a county and or a city that's relying a lot on sales tax. So this, an economic downturn hits us in a much different way. In fact, actually we're probably have a much less volatile revenue streams than a lot of agencies do. And to me though, the one thing that jumps out is that 617 funding, and that didn't, and that's the most vulnerable, it seems to me, and potentially we always knew the iffiest going forward. And it's actually a significant amount of money, and it's a variable that wasn't, I don't think there was a like variable back in the recession of 08-09, right? And it's extremely important funding and program in terms of the work that this air district is doing. So I guess what I'm thinking about is actually I'm thinking out a few years, and I would agree with you that I guess you made the assumption that 617 is in place for this coming year. You said that did I hear you say you thought we were going to get that?
It appears that's the way it's being handicapped right now. And so, but in the pessimistic lines that I showed, I did start from our not getting it this year, but it's very easy to just take those lines and move them over 1 year.
Right, right. And I suspect it will. There's going to be a lot of stuff on the state's chopping, on the state's budget chopping block in the coming years, and they're going to be hit, of course, really hard because they're so sales tax dependent. So then the other half of this question or musing is around our use of reserves. And when I look at the reserves slide, the slide that, can't remember which one it was. But I'm remembering a balance of $6 million before we hit our $20 million that we want to keep in the bank, or our 20% that we want to keep in the bank.
Yes, that's slide 18.
Okay, yeah, there it is. So I was kind of shocked to see that with this current budget proposal, we were going to be left with only $6 million over that 20%. And I guess what I'm getting at is, I'm concerned about burning through our reserves too quickly, and I'm coupling that with thinking we're going to need to use reserves in a different way as we recover from this economic hit, or as the economy recovers from COVID, in that we may need to use reserves not just to stabilize our general budget, but to enable to keep 617 moving forward if there's a lapse of funding from the state. And I'm not sure if that makes sense, but I just, can you talk about the reserve burn rate and how this economic downturn is different than what we don't know, have all the answers, of course, but it feels a lot different than 08-09.
Thank you, Director Rice. And of course, your observation is exactly correct, that if we attempted to meet that gap only with reserves, that would not work for very long. And so that's why it's important to, for instance, look at the manner in which our service supplies have increased over the last several years. I think I discussed when I showed the historical trends for expenses, how our service supply expense has increased by about $14 million since around 2009, I think. So your point is exactly correct. We would have to use a blended approach. We would not survive only with reserves. We would have to substantially reduce service supply, defer any capital improvements, and perhaps also, I don't know about attrition. I couldn't speak to that, but that's certainly in the toolkit, and we did use it last time.
Okay, and then on to that last point around attrition and retirements, and I think most agencies did use that as a way to avoid layoffs in the last economic downturn. But there's also something to be said for, as we, in terms of filling vacancies, that we really prioritize what are those vacancies that, I mean, because there's going to be some filling as well, be really conscious about filling where we need the workforce most in terms of a policy. So my last thought is, do you think that there's going to be anything different this go round, or this experience, with regards to our pension obligation and how we may actually have to, we may be asked to do more than we did the last go round?
Oh, that's a key question. I think to your point, the obvious big difference is the AB 617 possibly going away, and that being, you know, nominally 10% of our budget. But CalPERS moves slowly, but it certainly seems there's only one direction they can move, and that is towards requiring larger and larger contributions. So to the degree that we can build into our budget now those ratios, so to speak, the better off we are. In other words, if we can't use current discretionary funds and transfer them slowly over to the non-discretionary required, then that's going to be a difficult time. CalPERS does move very slowly in that way. So, but still, we're $100 million budget nominally, and we're seeing an extra million every year, as far as the eye can see, for CalPERS, that starts to add up.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate all the comments so far. I think they're great questions that are helping inform all of us. Director Sparing, you have your hand up, followed by Director Hudson, followed by Director Cutter, and I also have a member of the public that will be recognized. Director Sparing, are you there? Let's move on to Director Hudson.
Yeah, I want to make three quick points, and maybe Jim will be back. When I look at the budget, we were supposed to we expected to receive $10 million for 617, and we're trying to make up a $1 million shortfall. Immediately, that tells me that this state program is already starting to short us what we are expected to do the job, the amount of money we need. If they don't send $9 million and they don't send anything, what Katie just talked about, the reserves will be under that $20 million expectation. If this state is doing this as a one-time $9 million, which we were told at the last meeting, I can accept it. If they expect us to continue to run their program, which they're prioritizing, we need to give 617 a second look on whether or not it is the most important thing we're going to spend our money on, because it's going to take it. That's a large cost. The next thing is, I saw the settlement at $3 million. That's just an outgo. I mean, are we getting any of that back and we're just not budgeting it for it? Where is that at this time? Don't necessarily need to have it today, but it would be nice to know. The other thing that really has me concerned, when we start trying to get the refineries, sorry, I got to keep the light on, the refineries to pay the amount of money we want to come in on the budget, we're ignoring that the other categories are the ones that are below 85%. And that was the concern I had in our previous budget, that we're not going up cost of living, and we're going to double down next year when many of these categories below 85% aren't going to be looking at 3.1 or the 6 or 9% we were talking about this year prior to doing away with fees increase. They're going to be looking at double from this year and next year. And that's just not sustainable. My points.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me now?
Yeah, Director Sparing, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Many of the issues that I want to raise, so I'll just sort of make some comments. And Jeff, if you want to respond, that's fine. First, I want to thank staff for not increasing the fees. You know, I think the optics of that right now are just really bad. And, you know, when I look at even the refineries, the number of people that are unemployed, the businesses, city, counties, everybody is really going to be struggling. And, you know, for us not to at least be sensitive to that, I think would be a mistake. I do not support the reducing the OPED or the CalPERS allocations. I think that's a high priority and should not be considered under any circumstance. I'm not sure why we're going up to 405 employees. As I look at this budget, it really, I would think that we'd hold it where it is right now and try and figure out how we do that. I want to agree with Dave that I wanted to talk about AB 617. You know, the board needs to make a decision whether we're going to continue to support that or not. I don't think that if the state does not fund it, that's a terrible precedent to set to start funding programs that originally had state funding. They decline, and, you know, that really impacts our budget in the future. And so I think we have to be careful taking on those responsibilities without really thinking it through. The decline on reserves, I agree with Katie. That's a concern that I really have. I think it's something that we have to look at and consider and make sure that we really don't get in a position to where the purpose of those reserves is not there when we really need it. And Mr. Chairman, those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Director Sperring. Well stated. Director Cutter.
Hi, two things. Kind of ditto everything that Jim just said about, I think looking at our staff and stuff, we have to kind of now have another strategic meeting on what we decide we're going to do, knowing that we're going to have less of a budget to do it. So what areas we're going to do it? Does it mean hiring staff? Does it mean going after, 617, which I really hope you do, but it's because of selfishly San Leandro is kind of next in line. But I understand if we can't do it, we need to figure that out. The second thing is I was on a CalPERS webcam, I think it was this week, Monday, or I forgot what day. Anyway, they said for 2 years, you're safe. We're not going to do anything for 2 years. After 2 years, then there's a 5-year adjustment period where they will get you up to the place that you need to be. So that 5-year is going to be quite steep in raises. And then there's 15 years that you live with it before it goes down. That's not taken into any account, though, the newer workers or if there's any changes made from Sacramento or anything. But I just wanted to relay the part that the 2 years is a safe period for us to kind of make plans. But certainly we have to make plans because it's going to change in 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Chu.
Thank you, Chair Sinks. I really appreciate the dialogue around the uncertainty. And I think even with the revenue projections similar to our own, there's a lot of uncertainty in the economy, right? And how different sectors are going to be able to respond to this. And, you know, even the numbers that we have are kind of like, they're retrospective and they're a lot of the earnings that we're seeing from companies are from last quarter. And we know that the deepest impacts that we're seeing are actually probably going to come in this next quarter earning reports from all the companies. And, you know, trying to figure out through our own crystal ball what everyone's earnings will be is almost next to impossible for us to do. And so I do appreciate kind of this, you know, our district stepping forward in choosing to say, you know, at this time, we're going to hit pause on our fees, but still continue the important work that we promised and we owe the community that have been disproportionately impacted by air pollution within the Bay Area. So the other point that I wanted to raise is, you know, I know we're really, really focused and we should be on the discussion of the kind of how are we going to adapt and adjust, and all the points that have been raised are completely fair and great points. And I did want to just highlight that, you know, we are able to be in this position to have this kind of conversation because of the policies that this board and this air district has put in place over many years. When you think about the fee recovery goals, the retirement funding, like this has even allowed us to have this conversation of should we use a little bit of our reserves now, even with that uncertainty. So I did want to credit kind of this board for their leadership over in the past and getting us to this place to be able to have this kind of conversation. Otherwise, we would be having a much different conversation if we weren't even close to our fee recovery goals. And I think we still want to hit that as a target. And I think clearer definition of how we start inching forward, it may not be all at once. We may not be able to like double fees all at once, because I think that's going to have to be determined how the economy is starting to come back and how our businesses are coming back. So we may have to take kind of different approaches with different sectors at different timing intervals of how we get back to the levels that we want. So thanks for the presentation, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Ross.
Thank you, Chair Sinks. This is a question for Jeff and then a question for Jack if he's thought out yet. The Jeff, I saw the asbestos down 50%. 1.5 million, so that implies there's a $3 million expected revenue stream from asbestos. Are there any other, aside from the large sources, any other fee categories where we're going to be expecting or you're contemplating a decrease in revenues of over, say, $500,000 to $1 million, or over $1 million if there are others?
You know, it's a very good question, Director Ross. We spent a lot of time contemplating different sectors of the economy, what's happening with them, what kind of revenues we might expect. And it is largely a blended number that I'm bringing forward to you. But to your point, the details underlying that blended number are quite interesting. I'm not prepared to have those in detail right now, but I'd be more than happy to have a detailed conversation on the underlying elements in that blended number, that 85% that we're expecting. I'd be happy to bring that forward next time.
Okay, and further down on that, what is the assumption, and they probably into the weeds, of when we get into down economic times, or is a percentage of compliance, the percentage of compliance probably drops down where people don't get those asbestos permits, they don't get the, what do we do in those times? I mean, and do we calculate for that?
Yes, we're going to think about how we deal with folks, possibly in a different way, who aren't able to pay as opposed to aren't willing to pay. And
now, Jeff, do you want me to chime in here a little bit?
That would be great. Thank you, Jeff.
So, Director Ross, what we're thinking about doing as staff is being able to put together a program for small businesses that provide some relief in terms of time if they need additional time. Because what we're finding out of there is this economic situation is really hitting smaller businesses pretty hard. And so you can imagine, and you know this, we regulate and permit, you know, auto body shops, gas stations, a lot of smaller businesses that potentially are going to be pretty negatively affected right now. And so we're thinking that what we might do, and we're going to come back to the board about this, is create a program that will allow people to, if they need a 6-month relief on their renewal fees and things like that, that they can apply for and receive those types of relief on a short-term basis.
Great. And it, for context, and while we got you, thank you, Jeff. And while we got Jack.
Yeah. Sorry about my technical difficulties, by the way, board. I do apologize. We're working on it.
That's a, tough times. So on this one, continue on this subject, it would be good when you come back to the board of the plant, it'd be good to know how many actual permits and businesses and actual people we are dealing with in terms of all these permits and fees. I mean, the hundreds, the thousands, how many actual businesses are affected by our activity? And do we interface with? I mean, getting it, because I couldn't tell you. I imagine it's thousands, but it would be good to know because as you mentioned, these businesses.
If you'd like, Director Ross, I can, and board, I can give you rough numbers. Roughly, we have about 20,000 different permits spread amongst 10,000 facilities. And Damien can correct me, but those are rough, very rough numbers.
Okay. Very good, Jack. Spot on.
Okay. So, because there are some facilities where there are multiple permits, and then there's a lot of facilities where there's just one, right? Maybe a hotel has a boiler in the basement that has a permit. And that's there's a huge amount of population like that. Or there's a facility with a backup generator. There's just one permit. But then there are these very, very large facilities that have multiple permits with us.
Okay, I understand we've got the large facilities. Maybe when you come back to us, you could break out some of the smaller businesses, create some delineation between the mom and pop and the moderates and then the larger facilities. So we get a feel of how many actual struggling frontline small businesses that we deal with. The second question is, would be for you, Jack, is your thoughts on cost containment. We heard from Jeff. Maybe your thoughts would be helpful. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, for those two items, I'd like to come back to the full board about some steps we're taking to be responsive to the small businesses, and we'll delineate those different levels, Director Ross, as you're indicating. And so I think also what I owe this board is a conversation about cost containment, because it just makes sense for us to take a look at how can we be a little bit more efficient in our operations, how can we contain some of the cost as we move forward. No matter what we end up doing in terms of the budget or fees, I think that's just the place we need to be in moving forward. And as I'm sure a lot of your cities and counties are doing the same. And that's something I'd like to bring back to the board this summer, maybe early this summer.
From my perspective, I think there is, I mean, Director Bowder's kicked this off and talked to the risks. And I think, there are a lot of financial risks we face here, any of which could land us in trouble. And to me, it feels like the message on what we would cut, for example, should one of these things occur, example, we don't get 617 funding from the state or it's materially cut. I mean, what are we going to do if we don't have services and supplies to help with the staff we've hired? Can our 617 work be effective if our message to the state about, hey, folks, if you don't give us this funding, we really have to cut back on this program. That may be a much clearer message than something muddled that says we got to go find a little money here and a little money there, right? Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it's a good point, Mr. Chairman. I think our biggest risk is, frankly, the 617 funding. As Jeff indicated, it's as much as $9 million. And
yeah.
It is so hard, and I'll have Alan add to my remarks, Alan Abbs. It's so hard to figure out right now with from the budget, I'm talking about the state budget, to figure out if we're still in line to receive those monies going forward.
And I think the idea that you had, that if we say, okay, the air district's willing to put up some money,
right,
with the hope that the state will match that. But maybe we need another message to the state that says, we're putting up this money, but if you can't come in with us, we're going to have to do something different.
Yeah, and Director Bowers, I know, has pointed out that that logic may not necessarily hold completely, but I think there's also another message that it sends to the sources that we regulate that this program is important. And I think the communities particularly will see that we take, this program very seriously, and we're going to take steps to even, impose fees on our biggest sources to pay for it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm wondering if we ought to hear from our attendees, since we're well into comments at this point. Could I recognize, let's see, I have Jed Holtzman and Francis Keeler. That's all right with my colleagues. Jed, are you there? Is Francis Keeler available?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Jed, go ahead, please.
Oh, super. Thank you. I believe I got muted. Jed Holtzman from 350 Bay Area. Thanks a lot for the opportunity. I have a lot to fit in here. First of all, I just want to say, in the context of this conversation, it's unclear to me why the cost recovery goal is not 100%. Any less than that means that we are externalizing the cost of trying to regulate these facilities, i.e. to moderate their damage on the community for profit. We are externalizing that cost onto those very residents, and that just seems fundamentally wrong. I mean, I get that we were way below 85, and that's a good interim goal, but we really need to be recovering our costs for the work that we're doing, or else it's going really onto the public. Jack made a comment, I think, in your April board meeting that the Air District is continuing its work in the midst of this pandemic. And it was a very positive statement, which we were very excited to hear. But if the Air District is continuing its work apace, then the funding of the Air District's work also needs to continue. And I think that the presentation we just saw, really illustrates that. You can't do both. And any difference in costs between what you're talking about raising and what you're talking about spending are really falling on communities. The less fees that you collect, the slower rulemaking happens, the less enforcement there is. All of those things result in greater health burden, more suffering and death in the communities that you represent. Ultimately, there were certain fee schedules that were proposed to be raised. G3 covered 15 biggest facilities in the region. M covered 42 biggest. P covered the 87 largest. W covered only refineries and support facilities. Cost recovery in those cases, in at least one case, was in the lowest category that you measure, which was, I believe, 50% or lower. These are the largest facilities in the region. These are not the mom and pops. These are not the moderates. These are, you know, refineries, metal melting, marine unloading, power plants, chemical plants. The idea that we need to keep spending public money to try to regulate these facilities but can't recover our basic costs from these facilities is truly madness. Chevron just pulling out, not to pick on them, just picking out one. Their market cap is $180 billion. Marathon on the other end, the low end, $18 billion. Billion with a B. The amount of funds that we are talking about raising, even if we were to increase our fees, is so small, so infinitesimal to their market condition, but yet we're talking about increasing our cost recovery from 50 up to closer to 100%. We simply have to do this work for the community, and sorry I ran out of time. I have even more to say.
Thank you, Jed. Could I recognize Frances Keeler, who has her hand up?
Thank you. This is Frances Keeler with C. We agree with the directors that raised the issue with cost containment. Cost containment is a key issue for us, especially in these economic times. We appreciate that there's a lot of uncertainty in the district's revenue ongoing, but because of the economic hardship, so many businesses and employees are facing, it's important that staff reduces expenses as much as possible. And operate as efficiently as possible while maintaining effective programs. We would like to see a cost containment plan as Mr. Broadbent had expressed for this year and for future years. And we are members of the budget advisory group, and we look forward to, you know, expressing our help with staff going through, developing a plan, looking at anything that we can assist with. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you so much. I don't see any other members of the public who wish to speak. Marcy, do you have any comments to read?
No.
Okay. Are there any other members of the public that wish to speak? If so, we'd like to hear from you now. If not, we'll...
Mr. Chair, yeah. I have Ness, Wagon, Connect, Rice, and Joya.
Yes, of course. I just wanted to make sure we gave the public their fair shake at this. So I will recognize John Joya.
Thanks. I just wanted to say, I think on this whole AB 617 issue, I think it's a bit premature because it sends the wrong message to the public to talk about ending this program. First of all, the state hadn't yet enacted its final budget when the pandemic started. We realized that the governor's budget in January may have had less than we wanted for AB 617. There was a strategy to work with the legislature and the governor's office. And then the pandemic hit. So I think we need to be very clear and not put out a message to the community that we want to jettison AB 617. And I don't think that's what I heard, but we're working to fund it by raising the fees on those who we regulate. We're going to continue to work with the state whenever they get to developing a new budget. This is a statewide program that's not going away. It's high priority for highly impacted communities. We'll just need to continue working to ensure that that the state and those we regulate, right, both of them, share the cost on implementing this program.
Thank you, John. Director Nis, then Director Wagon Connect.
So I think the discussion on 617, which Jim Sparing brought up, is really interesting. If you think back to 2016 and 17, which is when this went into place, and remember what the promises that were made from the legislature at that time, and I'm looking at you, Jack Broadbent, because I just remember this all too well. And at that time, we predicted we might end up in just this situation, which means that people don't remember what happened 3 or 4 years ago. They don't remember the promises they made. And if the money isn't there now, then, and John, maybe we'll collect that amount of money, maybe not. But Jim Sparing, I appreciate your bringing that up because that's a really difficult one and one that we are committed to. But I think long-term, we really have to look carefully at how we continue to support that. Mm-hmm. I was glad to hear and I think it was way back, John, when you were talking about CalPERS, which I think is going to be a long-term major issue as well. So I certainly have heard a number of things that I think this morning were well worth the discussion and so forth. And but I would leave it here that I have great concern about 617, and especially as people change at the legislative level, it gets hard to remember what kind of promises were made in the past that we end up being responsible for in the future. Thank you, Chair.
Indeed. Well said. Director Wagon Connect, and then Director Rice, and then Director Ross.
Good, thank you. I just have one question. We all went to, when we went to Sacramento to do our lobbying, and we were talking, what was our ask? What were we thinking that we might be able to get from the legislature? We had thought maybe the $10 million was kind of the base, and mm-hmm. what were we looking at that point?
So, Mr. Chairman, Director Wagon Connect, I think what we were doing was, the message we had to the legislators was, we need to have you continue the funding. The 10 is, in our minds, the floor, right?
Kind of the minimum.
Right, right. We wanted more than that. And then, of course, the whole world changed. So, right now, that's still going to be our message. And I'll look to Alan if you want to just add, because I know we have continued to press that point home.
Right. So just real quick, the governor should be coming out with his May revision budget next Thursday, May 14th. And so I'll be prepared to talk about that at the legislative committee meeting the week after that. But in short, so there's a couple options for the budget going forward. This the May revise is probably going to be a workload budget. It'll be the general accounts of the state, and a portion of the 617 funding we've gotten in the past has come from that general fund, and then another portion has come from the greenhouse gas revenue fund. And so we'll see next week if the governor's proposed any changes in how 617 is funded with respect to the general fund versus the GGRF, and then we'll have to plan our strategy accordingly for the rest of the summer as the rest of the budget's filled in.
So I think you said we'll have a lot better information on what the state's willing to do within a week or so. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
But if I can, Alan, I don't think we'll know about the 617 funding until probably the end of summer, right?
Well, there's one option, because the Air Pollution Control Fund paid $30 million of that 617 funding last year. And so that would be part of the general fund May revise that would come out next week. So we'll see our first indication next week of where the state's thinking about 617 in general.
The rest of it was made up by the GGRF?
Right, and that'll be later in the fall.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it might be helpful to directors to hear what the May revise has for us and contrast that with maybe a statement about funding that we saw last year, right? How did our 617 funding come in from the state last year? What was it composed of, and what fraction then are we seeing as a result of the May revise, and what still needs to be filled? I think that could be informative. Director Rice?
Yeah, thank you. And actually, so on our process for this budget, I'm assuming that like county government, this agency is required to have a balanced budget in place, adopt a balanced budget in June. And this meeting today is the first hearing, and we're going to have a second for adoption on June 3rd. And I guess what I'm wondering is there an opportunity in the interim, given there's going to be this May revise and then maybe some other information, and then also there's been comments made today by directors and by the public, is there an opportunity for is there scheduled another budget finance committee meeting and or anything that in case we want to make some revisions to this budget? And if our process doesn't allow for that and allow us also to adopt in time in June, can we build something into this budget or into the language of our adoption when we get to it that points to our ability to make adjustments as we learn more through the course of the year about what's happening with this COVID economy? So I guess
great
that's
question. Right. How does the process work when we want to make adjustments? Do we have a months-long process to do that? Is it two hearings and so forth?
Right. We do have two hearings, like you said, Dr. Rice. And so I think no matter what we do in terms of the adoption on June 3rd, we're going to need to revisit the budget and the fee structure. That was my recommendation, is that we come back after everything settles out, because as Mr. Abbs indicates, you have the first part of the state budget, but then I think since so much of what we rely on is the greenhouse gas reduction fund as well, that won't get figured out until the fall. And so that is a big chunk of our implementation money for 617 plus our incentives money as well. So that's why I'm recommending that you take a step that is somewhat of a pause on some things like fee increases, look to see where things settle out, and then revisit everything in the fall timeframe.
Okay, I think it'd be good to articulate those things that we've put a pause on and will likely be reconsidered in the fall to the degree that we can identify those when we do adopt the budget, just so that we're being very transparent and clear in terms of what we're looking at. The other point I wanted to make was I really think that we need to make the case to this governor, who was not the governor that put in place 617, but he's going to be with us for another 2.5 years, if not more, and around this 617 and how it aligns and how full funding of it aligns so well with actually his principles and in this COVID response. I mean, is incredibly strong language and push and emphasis on getting testing in disadvantaged communities, which tend to be our communities with the poorest air quality, which are the communities that we're focusing this 617 work on because we're supposed to. There's also a clear link between air quality and outcomes for folks who do come down with COVID. And, we've got a very, very, very smart governor sitting up there in Sacramento. He probably knows all this very well, but I think we should emphasize, amplify, and make sure that he's getting the message of how closely linked 617 is to COVID, the COVID response, and how important it is that our air districts have a sense of continuity of funding, because the one-year one-offs aren't gonna help us meet the objectives of 617. So those are my comments.
Thank you. Director Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Katie got most of a good portion of my question answered, because I do look forward to when the tide comes back in, hopefully very soon, we'll get a better idea of where we can adjust our fee increases should we decide to, that we are deferring today or could defer today. The other thing, and it's been a while since I've had to have recession era mentality, so I haven't asked about subvention. And I guess Jack or Alan could answer this. With regards to subvention, if we still have it, I suspect we do, has it gone up, down, or stayed relatively the same recently? And as the respiratory arm of the legislature, I'm wondering if they would be more inclined to keep us whole in that regard, or is that subject to cutting as well? Thank you. That's it.
$1.7 million.
Yeah, it's not a lot of money, Director Ross. Jeff, 1.7?
It's been 1.7 million for quite a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really meaningful for a lot of small districts. For us, it's a small part of a larger budget. But so far, they haven't cut it.
Okay. Would there be any chance they would raise it? there's my answer right there. Thank you, Alan.
Mark, whatever amount of coffee you're drinking in the morning, cut it back.
Do all districts get the same amount?
No.
The air districts have made several attempts over the last 5 years to increase subvention statewide, and that amount hasn't increased since 2001. It's been a statewide total of about $10.5 million, and depending on the size of the air district, it's basically a per capita allocation. The problem with state subvention is it comes out of the state's motor vehicle fund, which is paid for out of DMV registrations, and that fund has liabilities in the future that are far outweigh the revenue stream right now. And so there's always a danger it could be cut, but so far we haven't had any indications that it would actually be cut for us. But that'll be interesting to see next week when the governor's May revise comes out as well.
Mm. Yeah, maybe our major sources would like to help us in Sacramento, because one way or the other, you know, there's clearly a consensus on this board that we need to move our 617 work forward. So to the extent that, you know, we have to impose fees because we can't get money from the state, they would likely be impacted. Director Bowders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've really appreciated the conversation today. And I would just add one thing. I think we've identified two of what I think are the three biggest risks to the budget. The first we've all discussed is the uncertainty around the state funding for AB 617. The budget, as Alan noted, the revise comes out by the 14th. There will be fiscal outlooks that come out this week as well. So we can get a sneak peek on some of those items early, I think. The second is the CalPERS issue, and directors Niss and Rice and I have all discussed this, I think, at this point, but how that changes and whether it will change at the same incremental pace that it, as Jeff noted, it traditionally does, or whether there will be some political balancing that needs to be done to do something. There is the freeze that Director Cutter talked about in terms of rate changes to give some predictability to cities, but I think that the cliff off of the charts that we were presented today, you go past the 2 years, I think the prognosis isn't a linear graph anymore. I actually think it changes dramatically on that front. And then the last one, which nobody has discussed, and I would just put here for food for thought, is from an epidemiological perspective, there's anticipated to be a second wave of this, and it's anticipated that it could be very much worse than this. And so we're budgeting and having this conversation with the facts that are in real time today. But there are foreseeable things that are reasonably anticipated to happen that may exacerbate, worsen, or create new problems for us that are not contemplated in this. And so my concern with this budget from the beginning has not been that good practices aren't being proposed, by staff, they're just insufficient. This is insufficient, in my opinion, to really prepare us and be as positioned as best as possible to deal with the changes that are coming. It's one thing to say we can revise this budget in 6 or 12 months, but you can't make up lost time for things when you have a revenue shortage or you need to dump an expenditure. You've carried those things with you. So I just think it's worth putting those things on the table for food for thought. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we've made the rounds among all the people I've seen who've raised their hands. And I think staff has some food for thought. We have no action on this item. If there's any other director that wishes to weigh in at this time, please raise your hand or unmute yourself if that's difficult and speak up. Thank you very much. I think we will then conclude.
I see Director Groom raising her hand, sorry.
Oh, okay. Director Groom, would you like to unmute yourself?
Unmute, Carol.
I'm going to do that. Okay. Carol, can you start over? I've just unmuted you.
Thank you. I thought I had put my arm, I thought I had raised my hand to speak, but I guess I didn't. I didn't think I did it right. I just wanted to say that this discussion today has been quite robust, obviously. Many of the topics we have certainly brought up and talked and beat to death at the various budget and finance committees. And think that we got a little more direction today. And if we could possibly squeeze in another budget and finance meeting between now and our next full board, I think we would all be willing to do that.
Okay. Thank you so much. Seeing no other comments from directors, we will move on. Item 3 is public comment on non-agenda items. Do we have any such comments, Marcy? No, no, we don't.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Jack. Just if we were, the date of the meeting for May would be the 20th.
Okay.
Those are the dates in which we're trying to stack all the committee meetings.
Okay.
So if the board would like us to do that, I'd be more than happy to schedule that. I'm just moving off of Director Groom's comment.
Thoughts from anybody?
I think it's really prudent that the budget finance meet again in the interim.
Okay.
Let's consider that direction of the board to staff in that committee. Carol, I appreciate the offer.
Sure. You're very welcome.
So let's move on to
Rod, I got my hand up on that.
Oh, Karen, go ahead.
That's okay. I have no problem with stacking the meeting in May, but I think we have found that this stacking just creates problems. So once we're out of COVID or what have you, and I know everybody's done a lot of work on this, we have got to reevaluate when we get back in person these stack meetings. It really has been very difficult, given that we all have other obligations. And so I'm going to be talking about and advocating for no more than 2 committee meetings per meeting day. Today we had the clean air, which is fine. That takes very little time ad hoc on building. But these major committees, such as budget and finance, we are now an hour over. It was a robust conversation. We needed to have it. But this speaks to not stacking meetings. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
You know, I just want to echo, and Karen, we have an ABAG regional meeting soon after this meeting. And I've sort of mentioned this before. We're putting too many meetings together, right? So it's 11 a.m. I like to participate in these meetings. And what really sort of is a little bit dismaying, Mr. Chair, is that I thought we were going to do 2, but we're allegedly doing 3. And so this runs into other meetings. I don't know, as a courtesy, if we can just change this moving forward, but it is becoming a problem for some of the members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So when is the ABAG meeting?
At 1.
No, today it is not till 3, and that is not because this meeting. It's because of another meeting, and they couldn't get the WebEx, Zoom, or what have you. So we are meeting at 3 today.
3 o'clock.
That is an anomaly. We do normally meet at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
And so I'm just saying in the future we need to revisit this issue. And I don't know if we should go to the administration or executive committee, but we need to visit it. Thank you.
Chair Sinks, could I
make a
meeting? And this is just with regards to the meeting, the flow of the meetings today. I think typically, historically, we've done that, the foundation meeting and a regular board meeting together. And we also usually do the budget hearing right in advance of a regular board meeting too. That's my recollection. So today, to me, looked fairly typical from years prior when we get to this. I just want to make note of that.
No, you're absolutely correct, and I don't have a problem with that. But in past meetings, when we have stacked it, we've been having these problems. Thank you.
Okay. I know the board is of various board members are of different minds about this stacking. So I appreciate everybody's indulgence in this time where we find ourselves in a pandemic. And so I appreciate everybody's patience. If there are no other board member comments, I'd like to announce the time and place of this next budget hearing, Wednesday, June 3rd at 9:30 a.m. And this meeting will stand adjourned. I would like to take a 5-minute nature break before we continue to the board meeting.
Me too.
Thank you. So let's see if we can really do this in